This will forever remain one of the strangest mysteries in existence. A 44-year-old woman lived her life in constant fear of an attacker. Over a span of 7 years, she would be harassed by an unknown individual, leading to more than 100 police reports of stalking. They would call her to threaten her, or breathe into the phone until she hung up in a panic. They would lurk around her home at night, even going as far as to cut her phone line. Authorities were puzzled by the lack of evidence. Eventually, they would believe that they were being fooled. This led to a near complete disinterest in continuing her investigation, and everything would change when she turned up dead. This is the case of Cindy James.
Stop. This message could save you from investing your precious time into a true crime story that goes nowhere. Avoid that disappointment. You need True Crime Feed Podcast. Unlimited premium true crime curated for you. Find out about a female serial dater turned serial killer. The truth about the DARE program. Bizarre black markets, political murder plots, and a school for troubled teens so horrific it could be a Stephen King novel. True Crime Feed sifts through the archives from the past decade to select the best cases and gives you a quick overview sprinkled with a teensy bit of humor, plus a weekly top three power ranking for shows currently trending, and lets you know what shows to send down your podcast queue trapdoor. You know you want those thrill chills, so come and get them. Subscribe to True Crime Feed. That's True Crime F-E-E-D wherever you get your podcasts.
Cindy James was born on June 12, 1944. She grew up amidst the serene landscapes of British Columbia in Canada. She was fortunate enough to be raised by both her mother and father. Her father, Otto, was a retired colonel from the Canadian Forces, and her mother, Tilly, was a dedicated homemaker who nurtured Cindy and her five siblings in the suburban outskirts of Vancouver. At the time, they were the portrait of a quintessential middle-class family. Cindy was born with a gentle and compassionate demeanor, causing her to naturally gravitate towards a career in nursing. While in the midst of her nursing education, she met Roy Makepeace, a seasoned psychiatrist who was also 20 years her senior. Their courtship was swift, culminating in marriage a mere 5 months after their first encounter. Despite the substantial age gap, Cindy and Roy shared a commonality in their altruistic pursuits. Roy's psychiatric practice mirrored Cindy's dedication to Blenheim House, a haven for preschoolers struggling with behavioral and emotional challenges. Though Cindy's affection for children ran deep, the couple remained childless as they were both very career-driven. Yet, as their demanding schedules consumed their time, strains soon crept in to interrupt their harmony. And in July of 1982, those strains became too much for Cindy. She decided to leave her marriage and Roy completely, seemingly due to her devotion to her work. After 16 years, her marriage was now over, and she settled into her own home. She embraced the prospect of newfound independence, relishing the autonomy it promised. However, her excitement was short-lived. Just 3 months later, Cindy's promising future would quickly turn into a living hell. Cindy's nightmare began with a series of peculiar phone calls. The caller would say very few words, just heavy breathing and whispering Cindy's name. With it being the 1980s, tracing the calls was a near impossible task. For Cindy, a single woman, freshly out on her own, these calls were a threat she did not take lightly. She promptly sought the help of law enforcement. Despite her swift action and a report filed with the Vancouver Police Department, the calls persisted, each ring escalating her sense of fear. Cindy was now experiencing attempted break-ins, her pillowcase being slashed while she was at work, and a rock thrown through her window. Officer Pat McBride, assigned to Cindy's case, lent a sympathetic ear and approached her situation with a much-needed sense of urgency. As the investigation took place, attention inevitably shifted to Cindy's estranged husband, Roy. Yet, it was Cindy who vehemently defended Roy's innocence. Despite their separation, they maintained contact, and it was Roy who urged Cindy to involve the authorities upon discovering the slashed pillowcase. In Cindy's eyes, Roy was one of her few sources of support during this horrifying ordeal. She refused to believe that he was capable of putting her through such a nightmare. Law enforcement's options were limited, and all they could really suggest to Cindy was for her to remain vigilant and to promptly dial 911 if further incidents occurred. The anonymous calls persisted, each one giving Cindy the chilling impression of being watched. In one particular instance, the caller brazenly taunted her, insinuating a knowledge of her every move, even after she hid behind closed blinds. While many might have moved out of their home entirely, Cindy decided to stay at her home and weather the storm. For Cindy, her strength would be tested time and time again. In the following months, the situation got much worse. Cindy reported sightings of shadowy figures lurking around her residence, attempting to get inside her home. A cryptic note, reminiscent of ransom demands from thriller films, was placed on her porch. These notes were fashioned from cut-out magazine letters, most likely to avoid any handwriting comparisons. The assailant's campaign of terror escalated with each passing day. Her phone line severed, exterior lights vandalized, her beloved pets subjected to a violent assault, and the grotesque discovery of three lifeless cats displayed outside her home. All of this took place within the span of a mere 3 months. Cindy followed the advice she was given and called the police constantly. Officer Pat McBride was at the forefront of her aid. He went above and beyond, even installing deadbolt locks on Cindy's doors as a personal gesture of support. In an unexpected twist, the bond forged through this horror took a romantic turn, as Cindy and Pat found solace in each other's company. Within a matter of weeks, their relationship blossomed, culminating in Pat moving into Cindy's home. The affair between Cindy and Pat proved fleeting, coming to an end relatively quickly. Pat moved out of Cindy's home and, in the process, had an encounter with her ex-husband, Roy. Pat purportedly stumbled upon Roy in the alley behind the house, holding two firearms. Roy claimed he was merely safeguarding Cindy, citing concerns over the ongoing stalking incidents. Whether Roy's actions were genuinely protective or indicative of darker motives remains ambiguous. As time continued to pass, the torment inflicted upon Cindy reached alarming heights. Allegedly, she endured a barrage of unsettling phone calls, saturated with heavy breathing, coupled with menacing notes, one ominously declaring, "Soon, Cindy." A photograph of a corpse, meticulously cut from a book and placed beneath her car's windshield wiper. Furthermore, Cindy purportedly suffered repeated instances of her phone line being maliciously severed at five distinct points. Despite her pleas for help, authorities found themselves at an impasse, unable to identify the perpetrator behind these sinister acts. Desperate for answers, Cindy turned to her telephone provider, requesting a wiretap in a bid to trace the origins of the ominous calls. However, the calls were too brief to get a precise location. She was only told that they were traced to the outer Vancouver area. Defenseless, Cindy's ordeal continued unabated. For some time, she was solely receiving threats, which was horrifying enough. But then, Cindy would become the victim of violence. On January 27, 1983, Cindy's friend Agnes Woodstock paid her a visit. She was horrified by what she saw. Cindy was sprawled on the floor of her garage, bloodied and with a black nylon stocking tinged tightly around her neck. Agnes immediately helped Sydney and frantically called 911. According to Cindy's account, she was at home when she heard a knock at her back door. Upon answering, she was accosted by a man who forcibly dragged her into the garage where his accomplice lay in wait. In the ensuing struggle, one of the assailants used a sharp object to inflict numerous cuts on Cindy's body while strangling her with the stocking. Overwhelmed, Cindy lost consciousness, only to be revived by Agnes. Despite her fragmented recollection of the assault, Cindy mentioned the possibility of being sexually assaulted with a knife, coupled with over a dozen cuts. Law enforcement approached this scene with skepticism. The injuries she sustained appeared predominantly superficial, devoid of conclusive evidence supporting claims of sexual assault with a knife. Suspicions heightened when Cindy failed two polygraph tests administered as part of the investigation. Though polygraph results aren't admissible in court and can be unreliable, they served as a red flag for the authorities. For the first time, there was doubt on Cindy's credibility. Cindy attempted to account for her failed polygraph tests by revealing a chilling truth. She recognized one of her assailants, but was too terrified to divulge his identity to the police, fearing retaliation against herself or her family. Law enforcement remained unconvinced by her explanation, maintaining their skepticism. After this vicious attack, Cindy finally made the decision to relocate. She returned to the home that she and Roy shared before separating. Despite this temporary arrangement, their marital reconciliation remained uncertain. Yet, Cindy still found no reprieve from the relentless harassment. She moved once more in the spring, desperately seeking solace in a new environment. Sadly, the mysterious calls found that residence as well. Cindy moved a total of 4 times within the span of a year, and her attacker followed her every step of the way. The situation took a sinister turn in the fall when Cindy discovered deceased cats hanging from trees in her yard, their lifeless bodies suggesting they had been strangled. One particularly chilling note accompanied the grisly scene, ominously declaring, "You're next." Despite diligently reporting each incident to the police, Cindy maintained her conviction that her husband wasn't the culprit, even as he remained the prime suspect under police scrutiny. Frustrated by what she perceived as a lack of progress in the official investigation, Cindy took matters into her own hands, enlisting the services of a private investigator named Ozzy Caban. Ozzy emerged as a pivotal figure in Cindy's quest for justice, offering both support and expertise. Equipping her with a two-way radio for better communication, Ozzy strategized ways to potentially apprehend the perpetrator in the act. His efforts nearly bore fruit on January 30th, 1984, when Cindy urgently called for Ozzy's assistance. Without hesitation, Ozzy rushed to her aid, arriving at her home within minutes. Bursting through the door, he discovered Cindy sprawled on the floor, clutching a knife wound on her hand. Nearby lay another ominous note, bearing the chilling message, "Now you must die," echoing the nightmarish scenario of the past physical assault. Cindy was discovered unconscious, unable to recall any details of the attack. Suffering from a head injury inflicted by an unknown object and bearing a perplexing needle mark on her arm, the circumstances surrounding the assault remained even more mysterious. Toxicology testing revealed the absence of drugs in her system, leaving the investigators dumbfounded by the presence of the needle mark. There was also no evidence of forced entry. So how did the assailant get into Cindy's heavily secured residence? The absence of signs of forced entry only deepened suspicions towards Cindy's estranged husband. With no other apparent motive or suspect in sight, Roy became the primary focus of the investigation. Roy vehemently denied any involvement and presented a solid alibi for many of the major events. He also suggested that the perpetrator could be connected to Cindy's profession, speculating that someone affiliated with her work might harbor animosity towards her. Throughout the summer of 1984, Cindy's torment continued unabated, with her home becoming the focal point of more attacks. On one occasion, she returned home to find her back door wide open. Inside, her beloved dog was beaten and tethered to a table with a rope. An explicit birthday note was left in her kitchen, alongside a cigarette butt of an unfamiliar brand, suggesting the presence of an intruder. The escalating severity of these incidents sparked two unsettling beliefs. Either Cindy had caught the attention of a violent stalker, undeterred by the risk of detection, or she herself was spiraling into a disturbing cycle of self-harm. Regardless of the truth, Cindy's declining mental and physical well-being did not escape the notice of those around her. Her family, friends, and co-workers all observed the profound changes in her demeanor. Fatigue and stress etched lines of exhaustion on her face, while rapid weight loss bore testimony to her deteriorating state. With each passing day, Cindy drifted further from her former self, a shadow of the vibrant woman she once was. The local police department, equally exhausted by the relentless onslaught of incidents, found themselves at their wits' end. Despite exhaustive efforts, including intensive surveillance and investigation of every lead, tip, and angle, the perpetrator remained frustratingly elusive. The chilling saga took an even darker turn in July of the same year, when Cindy reported a harrowing abduction. Awakening on the roadside, with the familiar black nylon stocking cinched around her neck and needle marks on her arm, Cindy recounted a nightmarish encounter with a bearded man and a blonde woman in a dark green van. Their seemingly innocuous request for directions spiraled into a terrifying ordeal, with Cindy left disoriented and traumatized, her memory a haze of confusion. Once again, despite the presence of needle marks, toxicology testing yielded no evidence of drugs in her system, deepening the mystery surrounding her story. The private investigator Cindy hired proposed an unconventional approach, hypnosis. Believing that suppressed memories might hold the key to unraveling the mystery, Cindy underwent multiple hypnosis sessions, each yielding intriguing but ultimately inconclusive results. In one session, she hinted at witnessing a double murder, only to awaken with no recollection of her revelation. Another session dredged up a startling accusation against her former husband, alleging his involvement in a gruesome crime aboard a yacht in 1981. However, this claim couldn't be substantiated. As Cindy grappled with internal turmoil, her struggles manifested in increasingly distressing ways. In a desperate bid to escape her torment, she attempted suicide in the summer of 1985, overdosing on painkillers. Despite promises to seek refuge with her brother for support, Cindy ultimately returned to the familiar confines of her home, a puzzling decision given the danger it posed to her well-being. Predictably, the cycle of stalking and harassment persisted unabated. Cindy's home became a battleground, besieged by a barrage of threatening phone calls, malicious letters, and even peculiar deliveries, including a makeup case filled with putrid meat. Then came the most alarming incident of all. Someone attempted to set Cindy's home on fire. Cindy had sought refuge by inviting her best friend and her friend's husband to move in with her. However, the sense of security was shattered one night when Cindy frantically burst into their room, trembling with fear over a mysterious sound she'd heard. As her friend's husband went downstairs to investigate, he was met with a horrifying sight: the basement engulfed in flames. Fortunately, the fire department arrived in time to extinguish the blaze. Yet, the shocking revelation that the fire had been ignited from within the house sent shockwaves through the community. Despite stringent security measures, including locked doors and unblemished windows, there was no evidence of forced entry. This disturbing revelation prompted authorities to reassess the situation, leading them to entertain a troubling hypothesis. Cindy James was orchestrating these events herself. This marked a pivotal moment in the investigation, with law enforcement increasingly convinced that Cindy's experiences were not the result of a stalker, but rather manifestations of her own psychological turmoil. Suspecting a break from reality, authorities took decisive action and admitted Cindy to a psychiatric facility for evaluation. She would spend 7 weeks undergoing intensive examination and treatment. Medical professionals who attended to her during her stay at the institution documented their suspicions as well. They suggested that Cindy was orchestrating the letters, inflicting her injuries, and setting her house on fire. Upon her discharge from the psychiatric facility, Cindy relocated to Richmond, a suburb of Vancouver, in December of 1985. Her transition to this new chapter in her life was marred by a chilling episode. During her lunch break at work, she was discovered wandering the area, devoid of shoes or a jacket, and sporting a black nylon stocking tied tightly around her neck. Despite her apparent distress, authorities entertained the belief that Cindy was once again fabricating her attack. Faced with a stark ultimatum from law enforcement, she reluctantly agreed to continue therapy. It is important to note that she never admitted to faking her incidents. Initially, Cindy's family and friends had rallied behind her, believing her claims of being stalked, threatened, and attacked to be valid. However, as doubts grew regarding her mental well-being, support waned, and skepticism prevailed. Her circle of friends began to distance themselves, while law enforcement, almost certain that she was behind her own assault, halted the investigation of her claims. If indeed Cindy had been deceiving everyone, the ramifications of her actions amounted to a staggering waste of police resources. As the situation intensified, Cindy found herself dismissed from her job and plunging into a deep depression that landed her under suicide watch. Concerns among her doctors escalated, fearing that any attempt on her life could be staged to incriminate Roy. Another round of hospitalization followed, this time yielding promising signs of improvement. Upon her release, Cindy decided to reclaim her maiden name and cut off any connection to her ex-husband. She purchased a new home, hoping for a fresh start. For a time, it appears that the attacks had ceased, or perhaps Cindy had abandoned her charade. Encouragingly, her life took a positive turn, and she secured a fulfilling job as a nurse at Richmond General Hospital. In May of 1989, Cindy took a well-deserved 5-day vacation from her job. Though sporadic incidents still occurred, the frequency of harassment had notably decreased compared to previous years, offering a glimmer of hope for a semblance of peace and normalcy in Cindy's life. On May 26th, Cindy embarked on a routine day of errands, ticking off tasks like cashing a check, purchasing a birthday gift for a friend's child, and indulging in a beauty salon visit. With plans for a gathering with friends later in the evening, she dashed to the grocery store before heading home. However, when her friends arrived for the planned get-together, they were met with an eerie absence. Cindy was nowhere to be found, and her car was conspicuously absent from the driveway. In an era before widespread cell phone usage, the task of locating her became a daunting challenge. Concerned friends and family launched a frantic search, only to be met with dead ends. Eventually, Cindy's abandoned vehicle was discovered in the parking lot of the grocery store she had visited earlier. Traces of blood stained the driver's side door. Her belongings, including her purse, wallet, groceries, and the birthday present, were all left abandoned in the car. Nearly 2 agonizing weeks passed before Cindy's fate was revealed. A grim discovery awaited a maintenance worker who stumbled upon her lifeless body near an abandoned house, approximately a mile from where her car had been found. Bound hand and foot with rope, Cindy lay fully clothed, but no longer alive. Upon conducting an autopsy, medical examiners once again noted fresh needle marks on Cindy's arm. However, this time, their findings revealed the presence of morphine and other substances in her bloodstream. Tragically, her cause of death was attributed to an overdose, labeled as the outcome of an unknown event. Cindy's body was discovered lying on her side, her feet bound together and tucked beneath her bottom, with her hands similarly restrained behind her back. While such a contorted position would be challenging to assume voluntarily, it wasn't deemed impossible. Law enforcement leaned towards suicide as the explanation, supported by expert testimony suggesting that Cindy could have tied herself up within a brief window before the drugs took effect, possibly within 3 to 5 minutes. Cindy's inner circle remained steadfast in their disbelief. To them, her death only reinforced Cindy's consistent claims of being targeted by an external threat. In their eyes, the evidence pointed not to self-inflicted harm, but to a sinister plot orchestrated by someone intent on tormenting and ultimately ending Cindy's life. Regrettably, this case unfolded with law enforcement heavily inclined towards suicide, resulting in a lack of a comprehensive homicide investigation. Their skepticism stemmed from a belief that Cindy had orchestrated similar scenarios in the past, leaving her psychiatric team convinced that she was capable of staging her own demise as a final bid to garner attention from the police. For the case of Cindy James, the answers remain elusive, despite the plethora of police reports Cindy had filed over the years and numerous witnesses attesting to her various assaults. The official ruling of suicide curtailed any further investigation. Could Cindy have orchestrated her own demise? Perhaps. Yet, the specter of a persistent stalker haunting her for years, culminating in a fatal act, cannot be dismissed. This is the prevailing belief held by her family, a conviction that a killer remains at large to this day. Tragically, no suspects, including Cindy's husband, Roy, have ever been formally named. To this day, the death of Cindy James remains still an unsolved mystery.